I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. President Trump nominated Gina Haspel to be director of the CIA, replacing Mike Pompeo, who is now Secretary of State. If confirmed, Haspel would be the first woman to head the agency, and according to Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Richard Burr, the most prepared in the CIA's history. But she also had some explaining to do when she spoke to the Intelligence Committee on Wednesday because of her supervision of a secret prison in Thailand where Al-Qaeda suspects were waterboarded. She was also questioned about her involvement in the destruction of videotapes of the mistreatment and torture of terror suspects at that site. While the interrogation program was outlawed by President Obama in 2009, Haspel was asked about whether she would restart it.
I can offer you my personal commitment, clearly and without reservation, that under my leadership, on my watch, CIA will not restart a detention and interrogation program.
President Trump has said he wants to bring back torture, and if confirmed, would Haspel say no? We're going to talk about that and other questions involving Gina Haspel, who has spent the last 33 years at the CIA, and whether she is the right woman for the job. Joining us by telephone is Robert Turner. He is a University of Virginia law professor. He also was the senior White House attorney overseeing the legality of intelligence community activities from 1981 to 1984 under the Reagan administration. Robert Turner, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
I'm delighted to be here.
Also with us is Amrit Singh. She's senior legal officer for national security counterterrorism at the Open Society Justice Initiative, author of Eroding Trust, Death by Drone, and Globalizing Torture, and co-author of Administration of Torture. She joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Amrit Singh, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Pleasure.
Let me begin with what we just heard coming from Gina Haspel. President Obama outlawed waterboarding and some of these other techniques. Congress passed a law prohibiting them. The Army Field Manual prohibits them as well. Amrit Singh, is there a chance that waterboarding could come back?
I think there is. The Army Field Manual can be revised at the direction of the president. And moreover, nothing in Gina Haspel's testimony suggested that she would repudiate the practice of extraordinary rendition, which essentially involves torture at the hands of other governments that have been sent detainees by the United States.
To you, Robert Turner, does that concern you?
No, it doesn't. The issue of rendition did not come up in the hearings. It's very clear from her testimony that she understands that this was a really black eye for the CIA. She emphasized repeatedly it's not going to happen again. She strikes me as being a person of unusual character and talent, one of the few people who might stand up to the president. I was a major critic of the enhanced interrogation. I co-authored a Washington Post op-ed called War Crimes in the White House. I testified before the Judiciary and Intelligence Committees in the Senate denouncing it. Amrit and I are on the same side on that issue. The question is to me, do we punish a professional who's a non-lawyer, has no legal training, and who has been told the very highest authorities of our government, legal authorities, have approved this? The Office of Legal Counsel's opinions are legally binding on executive branch employees. Now, the Constitution twice prohibits ex post facto laws. In Article 1, Section 9 and Section 10, it prohibits both Congress from enacting them and the states from enacting them. Ex post facto laws are laws that change the law and apply it retroactively. And in this case, when she had been told this is not a legal issue, everyone involved has approved it. And by the way, I would also point out that a majority of the appellate judges that ruled on the issue agreed with the OLC opinion. It was not an unreasonable opinion. I criticize it. I think it was wrong. But the argument was quite reasonable. The idea that she should be criticized and denied a promotion because she followed the law as she was told the highest authorities had interpreted is contrary to American values, just as what one of my best friends calls torture light was contrary to American values.
Well, let me give Amrit Singh a chance to respond to that. The idea that that Gina Haspel is being held to a different standard today than the legal standard that allowed her, according to Robert Turner, engage in the kind of practices that have been condemned.
Well, I think it's very clear under international law that relying on either the orders of superiors or on legal advice is not a sufficient defense for engaging in torture. And the experience of the Nuremberg trials after World War II are clearly relevant here, where they essentially the Nuremberg defense does not apply in this case. So that sort of that disposes of the claim that she relied on legal advice. Secondly, it is not the case that most people thought that this was, okay. I mean, there were objectors within the government. The case of Alberto Mora, for example, on abusive techniques is well known. He stood up and said, no, he did the right thing. There's nothing to indicate that Gina Haspel said no, both on the issue of torture and on the destruction of videotapes. And then the claim, I don't know if I got it right, Robert, but the claim that the argument in favor was reasonable, I must beg to differ, because those OLC memos really went out on a limb, really stretched the law. Torture has been unlawful before 9/11 and after 9/11. That is a non-derogable obligation of the United States, which signed on to the Convention Against Torture. It's implemented in domestic law. The idea that the OLC would issue an opinion saying torture is not torture unless it inflicts pain equivalent to that arising from organ failure, frankly, that was the context of the OLC opinion, is just unconscionable. And the thought that the CIA now has a possible leader who really is very tainted by this practice of torture is a shame.
Well, Robert Turner, let me raise a couple of points with you. And actually, I want to quote something from the New York Times. And this is what was done to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He has been often described as the principal architect of the September 11th attacks. He was waterboarded 183 times. He was stripped naked. I'm quoting from the New York Times. He was doused with water. He was slapped. He was slammed into a wall, given rectal rehydrations without medical need. He was shackled into painful stress positions, sleep deprived for about a week by being forced to stand with his hands chained over his head. That's from Charlie Savage in the New York Times. By any definition, is that not torture?
I would agree with 80% of what Amrit just said, and I agree with what you just said. This is, to me, the issue is not was the OLC memo horribly wrong, and were these techniques not wrong. I do not agree with the Nuremberg parallel. Nuremberg, people were convicted for murder, rape, extermination, subjecting detainees to mustard gas, human experimentation, and so forth. The OLC memos were horrible. I will not defend them, but they did include a number of provisions designed to not cross the line of torture. For example, interrogators were allowed to slap a detainee in the stomach, but it could not be from further than 6 inches away and not for the purpose of inflicting pain. The idea is to disorient him and get him to talk. You could shove him against the wall, but you had to have a roll towel behind his head. The point is they were trying to put some limits on this. They got it wrong. But she said that there was no logic behind the OLC memos. The fact that the majority of the appellate judges and justices to assess the issue agreed with OLC suggests to me strongly, including the unanimous D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, that basically here's the issue. Common Article 3 of the four 1949 Geneva Conventions applies to conflicts of a non-international character occurring on the territory of a state party to the convention. First of all, the OLC people said there's 75 countries involved in the war against terror. Obviously, it's an international conflict. They were wrong, because to be an international conflict, you need to have a sovereign state on both sides. But it was not an unreasonable interpretation, occurring on the territory of a state party. To me, that's jurisdictional. The treaties cannot commit obligations for countries that are not parties to the treaty. But they looked at it and said this only applies to insurrections, civil wars, rebellions in one country.
Well, you know,
that, in fact, was the original intent until the final weeks of negotiations in Geneva. And indeed, one top British authority expert who took part in the negotiations wrote in 1956 that Common Article 3 applies to insurrections and civil wars and the like. So this was not an unreasonable, but it was a wrong interpretation of Common Article 3.
And let me ask you, could, though, Gina Haspel not have said on Wednesday, I was wrong. I either looked the other way, I did not comprehend what was being asked of me, I didn't know all that was going on, but in hindsight, I was wrong. She did not say that.
That's true, she did not. But also, let's understand her role in this. Early press reports said that she was directly involved in this, and in fact, she was present when one of the people was being abused and mocked him. But my understanding is that Politico has now withdrawn that story. And my understanding is she was in charge of the facility, but did not personally take part in this abuse.
But if she was
policy established long before she even knew about it.
Well, let me put this to you, Amrit, and we're almost up on a break here, and we have much more to talk about. But if she was supervising this black site in Thailand, did she have a responsibility to know what was happening inside that site?
Absolutely, she did. And I haven't seen anything in the record to suggest that she did not oversee the torture of al-Nashri. She may not have been in the room, but it's very clear if you look at the Senate Intelligence Committee report. It refers in a number of instances to the duties of chiefs of bases. And she was chief of base in Thailand, and she absolutely was on notice of what's going on. She did nothing to stop it.
Well, the chief of station, I won't disagree with that in principle. She should have known what was going on. But remember, this is a war. In war, it's perfectly lawful to kill your enemy. You can blow them apart with missiles, rockets. You can shoot them in the face. You can kill them when they're asleep. And thus, understanding what was right or wrong in an effort to stop the next 911, it was not as clear, I think, as some people look at it. There are things that we all will agree are wrong. Killing small children who have done nothing wrong.
Well, you know,
is
Robert Turner, I got to do this to you again, only because we have to take a very short break, and we'll get back to our conversation. That is Robert Turner. Amrit Singh joining us today on Radio Times. We are talking about Gina Haspel and whether she should be the new head of the CIA. We want to know what you think. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Amrit Singh. She is Senior Legal Officer for National Security Counterterrorism at the Open Society Justice Initiative, and with Robert Turner, University of Virginia Law Professor, and he was Senior White House Attorney overseeing the legality of intelligence community activities from 81 to 84, again under the Reagan administration, and again talking about whether Gina Haspel should be the new director of the CIA. Let me play another clip, and this is Senator Kamala Harris. She is questioning Gina Haspel on Wednesday, part of the hearing into her nomination to head up the CIA, and this is about the use of enhanced interrogation techniques or waterboarding.
Do you believe in hindsight that those techniques were immoral?
Senator, what I believe sitting here today is that I support the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to.
Can you please answer the question?
Senator, I think I've answered the question.
No, you've not. Do you believe the previous techniques, now armed with hindsight, do you believe they were immoral? Yes or no?
Senator, I believe that we should hold ourselves to the moral standard outlined in the Army Field Manual.
Amrit Singh, what do you make of that interchange?
I think that she doesn't want to say that the techniques were immoral. And I think that is an important reason for why she is not qualified to be CIA director, as Senator John McCain himself has said. I mean, it's appalling that this, in this dark chapter of United States history, that torture was committed. But the fact that you now have a CIA, possible CIA director, who was herself involved in that torture, was involved in destroying evidence of that torture, that she will not even look back and say that the techniques employed by the CIA were immoral is appalling.
Let me quote Senator John McCain. He said, this was yesterday, "I believe Gina Haspel is a patriot who loves our country and has devoted her professional life to its service and defense. However, Ms. Haspel's role in overseeing the use of torture by Americans is disturbing. Her refusal to acknowledge torture's immorality is disqualifying. I believe the Senate should exercise its duty of advice and consent and reject this nomination." Robert Turner, what do you make of what Senator McCain is suggesting?
Well, John McCain is a hero of mine. I've known him since he was on active duty as a naval officer. I worked as national security advisor to a senator back in the mid-70s. John was the Navy's liaison to the Senate. I love the man. He was a real hero in Vietnam. He had the option of coming home. He was torn all to hell. I have a lot of friends who were POWs in Vietnam, and to a man, they love him. They just think, you know, they basically thought when he said, "I will not go home until everybody who's been here longer than I have goes home," they thought he was committing suicide because he was just on the edge of dying. But let me give you, one of the points that I think we need to understand is sometimes morality is contextual. That is to say, sometimes all of our options are immoral and we have to pick the least immoral option. I'll give you an example. John McCain used to fly Navy jets over North Vietnam and would drop bombs from 4,000 to 5,000 feet with an almost certain likelihood that innocent people were going to be near the building, a perfectly lawful target, but there would be collateral damage. Perhaps small children would lose their lives because he pulled the trigger. Would anybody say that killing small children who've done no wrong is a moral outcome? No. But international law recognizes that when you have a legitimate military target, a certain amount of collateral damage, that's a word that means sometimes killing small children, is legal and even moral. And in this case, we need to understand, what was going on. They were trying to stop the next 9-1-1. And I think we need to understand the context of this. I think her statement there was politically absolutely stupid. And had she been more pragmatic and less principled, she would have said, "Of course it was wrong. Please confirm me." But she still is not certain that in the setting of trying to stop the next 9-1-1, that roughing up Al-Qaeda detainees, who, by the way, now they're not capturing them, they're just killing them. So I'm not sure the detainees come out better in the end. Was wrong. Now, obviously, the waterboarding is the worst. But stress positions and sleep deprivation do not come in the category of the crimes of Nuremberg.
Well,
the reason they're wrong is because we committed our sacred honor when we signed ratified the 49 conventions. We said that we agreed that all detainees in armed conflict would be treated humanely. And whether you say waterboarding is torture or not, it certainly is not humane treatment. And the other thing to remember.
Well, hold on. Yeah, Robert Turner, one second. I want to give Amrit Singh a chance to respond because Robert Turner has raised several times during our discussion about what is, in a sense, allowed on the battlefield, but also what is or isn't allowed when someone is a prisoner or being held in this case, in a site. How do you see this distinction between what is moral, what is immoral, what is right, what is wrong? How do you see this, Amrit?
I think Robert is wrong in comparing the battlefield the targeting of enemies and the battlefield with torture. I think that the law is very clear that torture is unlawful under all circumstances. That is very, very clear, and the CIA crossed the line.
I agree with that.
That is not the case necessarily with respect to killings on the battlefield, on a hot battlefield. So first of all, Robert, the situation we're discussing is entirely distinguishable from the examples that you're giving. And then second of all, the claim that this torture was the least immoral option is also wrong, because as we know from the exhaustive report of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the CIA engaged in torture while essentially lying about how effective it was. In fact, it is not the case that that torture was effective at protecting the United States from its enemies. In fact, many detainees fabricated evidence under torture techniques, and the CIA repeatedly lied to Congress and the White House about how effective these techniques were.
Let me quote Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and this, I think, was during his confirmation hearings. He said, "Give me a pack of cigarettes and a couple of beers, and I'll do better with that than I do with torture." Do you agree with that, Robert Turner?
I think it depends upon who you're interrogating. I'm totally against what happened. It was illegal. It was immoral. It was wrong. But Mattis is exactly right in the war against Saddam Hussein. Indeed, when I testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee, I spent some time before the hearing talking to one of the top Air Force interrogators, and he talked about interrogating one of the prisoners who was a colonel, and he gave him a cigarette and chatted, asked about his family, and he needed to take some water. And the guy, when he finished interrogating him, and he said, "Okay, that's all I have. Well, don't you want to know about the Scud missiles," which was our number one priority? The guy volunteered it. Radical Islamist terrorists who are willing to give up their lives for their cause are probably not going to be swayed by a cigarette and a cold drink as easily as your normal POW. But that doesn't mean we torture them. I agree with that. But again, you have to look. I don't agree with the Senate Intelligence Committee report. Top people in the intelligence community fought like hell to keep this program going. If they didn't think it served any purpose, they would have given it up the very first day. Now, one of the things the Senate says, the senators say, is there was no case where useful intelligence was or attacks were stopped or whatever solely on the basis of information gained from these interrogations. That may well be true, but that doesn't mean that the information was not decisive. Ms. Haskell testified that she doesn't think the torture works. She's opposed to it. She promised repeatedly it will not be returned. She is I've known seven directors of Central Intelligence or directors of the CIA and met two others. Good people all. But with the one exception of maybe Bill Colby, who used to come down and lecture in one of my classes here at UVA every year, I don't think any of them were as well prepared for this job as Gina Haskell. And I think the fact that she showed courage during her testimony, there were things she could have said that would have sped her through. There were some who would vote against her anyway, but she didn't because it wasn't what she believed. But what she does believe is this was wrong. She does believe is that today this is illegal. It will not be done. And I think she has the strength to make sure it's not done. Even remember our president.
Well, you know what, Robert, I hate to keep doing this, but I got to jump in because we've got callers, we've got comments, and we also have another guest as well. Robert Turner, he's a law professor at the University of Virginia. Amrit Singh, senior legal officer for national security counterterrorism at the Open Society Justice Initiative. I do want to play one more clip that we have. And this is a montage that we put together of President Trump, candidate Trump, advocating for torture and waterboarding.
They asked me, "What do you think about waterboarding, Mr. Trump?" I said, "I love it. I love it. I think it's great." And I said, the only thing is we should make it much tougher than waterboarding. And if you don't think it works, folks, you're wrong.
Waterboarding is fine, but it's not nearly tough enough, okay?
I would absolutely authorize something beyond waterboarding, and believe me, it'll be effective.
Does torture work? And the answer was yes, absolutely.
Amit Singh, I mean, it's clear that candidate Trump and now President Trump is in favor of waterboarding and other forms of extreme interrogation or even torture. Does he have the authority as president to bring this back?
Well, legally, he doesn't because it's unlawful. It's unlawful under domestic law and under international law. But you can bet he will try. And as I said, he could alter the Army Field Manual to allow torture. And the practice of rendition could be brought back as well. So I think that this administration will do everything in its power to stray from the path of the rule of law. And I fundamentally disagree with Robert when he thinks that Gina Haspel has the strength to stand up to President Trump. In fact, her position is extremely weak because she will not have bipartisan support, even if she is confirmed. She will ultimately be subject to arm twisting by the president precisely because he has pushed this nomination through and because she has very little support from all ends of the political spectrum to actually stand up to him.
Let me just add, I read the quote from Senator McCain, who opposes her becoming the head of the CIA. Kelly Sadler, special assistant to the president, said that McCain's opinion on Haspel, quote, doesn't matter because he's dying, which is an outrageous thing to say. Let me get, looks like Anne from Philadelphia to join our conversation. Anne, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Yeah, go ahead.
The Senate ratified the International Convention on Civil and Political Rights in 1992, which prohibits torture. The Senate ratified the UN Convention Against Torture, which prohibits, in 1994, which prohibits torture and rendition. The Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution says that international treaties are the supreme law of the land. I don't think it's hard to understand how Gina Haspel committed a crime. She should be on trial, not given a promotion.
And I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Amrit, I'm going to go to you first, but then I'll get you to weigh in on this as well. Robert, do you agree, Amrit, with Anne's assessment?
I do agree. I think that international law prohibits torture, and it also requires states to prosecute people who engage in torture. Gina Haspel was intimately involved, along with several other U.S. government officials who ought to be criminally prosecuted. And the fact that they haven't been prosecuted, the fact that there hasn't been accountability for torture, means that it is in danger of being done again.
President Obama did not want to do that, though. He said, look, let's move ahead. And he did not indict anybody.
In fact, yes. And then I think, I mean, that does not comport with what international law requires. The way to ensure long-lasting accountability is precisely to criminally prosecute individuals who engage in torture. And if you don't do that, then you set the path towards the revival of torture, as we are seeing in this case. I mean, the fact that President Trump can go out on the campaign and say he's going to bring back waterboarding and a hell of a lot worse is precisely because there has been no accountability for torture, that it hasn't been recorded in American history as a shameful act that is not only immoral but illegal and will be prosecuted under all circumstances as such.
And Robert Turner, you, I have the piece that you wrote in the Washington Post, War Crimes in the White House, the Dishonor in a Tortured New Interpretation of the Geneva Conventions. Should someone have been prosecuted for these acts?
It's a good question. Let me respond quickly. I agree totally regarding Trump. The man has no sense of honor. And this stuff needs to be stopped. It is illegal. The president has a lot of authority in foreign affairs that is unchecked by Congress or any other source. John Marshall in Marbury versus Madison discussed this, and I think that's right. But in this case, Article 1 gives Congress the power to define and punish violations of the law of nations. These treaties are part of the law of nations. Congress does have an express power to violate them, and those rules are binding. Now, the Senate doesn't ratify treaties. It's a common misunderstanding. The Senate advises and consents to the ratification, which is the final step the president takes in committing the country to a treaty. But also understand, the CAT, the Convention Against Torture, was, in my view, gutted by the Senate. When the Senate consented to the ratification of the Convention Against Torture, it included a reservation that said, for the United States, nothing constitutes torture that doesn't also violate the Bill of Rights. And that include that excludes a lot of things that I believe should have been outlawed, by the CAT. And I'm surprised the world community allowed us to do that. I thought it was an outrageous error. I think we should not engage in torture. I think we should respect international law. My primary reason for speaking out on this was that America, when we ratify a treaty, we give our solemn word, we stake our honor that we will comply with the terms of the convention. And once we've done that, we ought not violate those terms. We didn't do it in World War II, and we ought not do it in what you might call the war against terror, although I never much like that. So as far as whether somebody should have been prosecuted, when you've got this close a call, and remember, a majority of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals judges and Supreme Court justices who considered it sided with OLC by one. The Supreme Court,
the Office of Legal Counsel,
essentially 5-4. The Office of Legal Counsel.
I don't know which case you're talking about, Robert. To my knowledge, I don't know which case you're talking about, because the issue of U.S. torture has not been addressed on the merits by any judge.
Well, you know what,
of those cases have been dismissed on state secrets or grounds, essentially.
We're up on our break here, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation with Amrit Singh and Robert Turner, and we're talking about Gina Haspel, the CIA. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing. Let me just recap here. Gina Haspel's nomination to head up the CIA has revived a debate over the use of waterboarding and torture as a means of extracting intelligence from detainees. On Wednesday, the Senate Intelligence Committee held a hearing while Haspel was questioned about her involvement in some of these techniques, the destruction of videotapes of these interrogations, and her personal moral compass. The likelihood that she will be the next leader of the CIA is tough to predict at this point. She does have the support of former CIA directors, two former secretaries of state, but not the support of Senator John McCain and others. We are talking about all of this with Robert Turner from the University of Virginia Law School and with Amrit Singh, Senior Legal Officer for National Security Counterterrorism at the Open Society Justice Initiative. I know that the two of you are disagreeing about something, but I do want to read some more comments here. One from John, and he says, I'd like to point out that there are still 36 senators currently serving who were in office when waterboarding was taking place. An email from Stu. Let's be brutally honest. Our country tortures, and we accept it. We tortured under George W. Bush. We did it under Obama. We do it now, and Trump wants more of it. The rest of the talk is to confuse and obscure. An email from Celeste. It may be simplistic, but it was George Washington who said our nation would not torture for, quote, by such conduct, we bring shame, disgrace, and ruin to ourselves and their country. This was supposed to distinguish us from other nations. What has become of our honor? Let me get Frederick from Doylestown to join us on Radio Times. Frederick, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Marty.
Sure.
So, I'm a by far not a Trump supporter. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think I would probably have disagreed and with anything he said or has done in the last 2 years. But I think folks are kind of forgetting about the mood of the country after 9/11. You know, people were willing to do whatever it took to stop the terrorists. There was an outrage, there was anger. And I think for these politicians now to become revisionist of these, you know, interrogation techniques, it's just a political thing now. I just personally think that if anybody should be prosecuted, should have been Rumsfeld or even probably Bush. But so that's one comment. And the last comment I want to make is, you know, you're interviewing essentially the head of the CIA. Her job is to be deceptive. That the art of deception is the CIA. And so to blame her for not giving straightforward answers is actually to give her a compliment, because that's her job.
Well, those are two really interesting points. And, Frederick, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Amrit Singh, let me just pick up on the first one, which is whether it's revisionist, again, sort of holding her to a standard that more of us agree is the correct standard today than the one that was being debated when we were in the midst of this so-called war on terror.
No, I don't think it's revisionist. I mean, as I said, torture was illegal then. It's illegal now. As one of your people who called in said, George Washington prohibited it. Theodore Roosevelt prohibited it in the context of the Philippines. He said that, you know, torture is never justified. So it's very much part of the ethos of America's approach towards human rights, that torture is completely, utterly unacceptable. And I do think that it was the Bush administration that strayed from that path, that instituted techniques that were unlawful then and should be unlawful now. The fact that now this issue about things were different, the heat of the moment in 9/11 was different, that people were angry and it's okay to torture under those circumstances is misses the point. And the whole point about making the prohibition against torture absolute is precisely to say, in the heat of the moment, in the heat of the battle, you cannot torture even under those circumstances. And anyway, let's just go with the argument for now. Let's say, okay, in around 9/11, maybe things were different. But in 2005, why was Gina Haspel involved in the destruction of videotapes in 2005? I mean, we know from the questioning at her testimony that there were a number of news reports coming out about the torture by the CIA around then. Senator Levin had a bill pending requiring the investigation of some of that torture in secret prisons. So it was very clearly a cover-up. And the fact that she did not at any point say, no, we shouldn't do it. In fact, she was an advocate of the destruction of the videotapes I think that is not the kind of person you want to be leading the premier agency of CIA in the United States, because she's not going to be able to stand up to Trump. I mean, she herself said that it was Rodriguez who signed off on the destruction of the videotape. She sort of dodged the issue. And you can imagine that she would dodge the issue again if Trump said, engage unlawful activity. And let me say that this is not just about torture. It's not just about enhanced interrogation techniques. It's about all sorts of human rights violations that Trump has shown an appetite for. It could be to do with extrajudicial killings. It could be to do with mass surveillance. It could be to do with arbitrary detention. It could be, you know, there are a score of human rights violations that Trump would easily sign off on. And I don't think Haspel has demonstrated to the public, which, by the way, is the whole purpose of this hearing. The idea that she should be entitled to withhold information relating to her record is, I must disagree with that comment, because the whole point of the hearing is to air the question of whether or not she's qualified. And the fact that she herself was deciding on what information gets declassified for the purpose of the public to evaluate whether or not she's fit for this office demonstrates a fundamental conflict of interest.
And that came up with Senator Feinstein. Robert Turner, let me turn to you. We haven't really talked in detail about the destruction of the tapes. She did say that it was Rodriguez who was responsible for that, but clearly it was something that she supported. It's something that you support as well. How come?
It is. And most of what Amrita said, I agree with. We should not be doing torture. We should comply fully with all of our international legal obligations. This is not an issue. One just quick point. She said she was not aware of any case where the courts had addressed the issue of the OLC memos. Hamdan versus Rumsfeld, 2005, the three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit unanimously said Common Article 3 does not apply after reading the OLC memos. and the Supreme Court split essentially 5-4. It was actually 5-3 because the Chief Justice had been on the Court of Appeals and thus recused at the Supreme Court level. But he
that did not relate to the enhanced interrogation techniques authorized by this OLC. I'm sorry. The Hamdan case did not relate to that.
But it did say Common Article 3 did not apply.
Yeah.
And that was the core of this. Now, on destroying evidence,
yes,
I would have gone along. First of all, there was a paper record that both the Inspector General's office and the General Counsel office said was an accurate representation of what happened. Why did they want to destroy the videos? First of all, the videos showed the faces of covert operatives, covert agents, whose lives might have been endangered and certainly whose success, whose ability to continue to infiltrate, you know, various organizations abroad would have been totally compromised. A point she did not make, and I'm surprised she didn't because it's very important, is, first of all, Congress leaks. The founding fathers did not want Congress to have any role in intelligence, and they did not have any role other than providing general funding concealed in the Defense Department budget until I was working in the Senate in 1974. But aside from that, had these tapes been leaked, they would have been the biggest recruiting tool for ISIS and al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups you can imagine. They would have used these tapes to sign up thousands of terrorists to flood into Europe and the United States to blow things up. And, they had a clear record. She had been repeatedly told that there was no legal prohibition against doing this. When one senator says, I want to keep these records, you can find another 20 senators who will say, no, they'll get rid of them. That, you know, individual senators don't speak for the Senate. The Congress speaks by statute and by resolution. And so the fact that Senator Levin said, I think we should have a commission to inquire into this by itself had no legal effect. Now, also understand, when she drafted this memo as chief of staff, she had been told that before the memo goes out, we are going to take it to the director of the CIA and get his decision on it. And so she thought, she did not understand this was going to be sent out by Rodriguez right away. He later did that on his own. She learned about it when she got a copy of the memo, of the outgoing email in her inbox. So, I just don't think her role on this is as bad as it sounds. I think, and I, as strongly opposed as I am to what happened, I would have destroyed those tapes too, if for no other reason than to make sure somebody on the Hill didn't leak them and use them to recruit thousands of terrorists to kill Americans.
Well, let me pick up on that and put that to you, Amrit Singh. Is that a reason to destroy tapes?
I don't think it is. And in fact, she destroyed the tapes in violation of a court order. The ACLU had a case pending before Judge Hellerstein of the Southern District of New York, in which he expressly said more than a year before the tapes were destroyed that these records had to be produced or identified. So the legal advice she got was wrong. And I think Durham's investigation, in fact, found that legal advice was wrong. And moreover, she knew that it wasn't just a case of the legal advice she got, but, the considered opinion of White House counsel, of John Rizzo. And, John Rizzo was furious when he found out that the tapes had actually been destroyed. And I think that there is a real factual issue of what actually happened in relation to what Rodriguez had told Haspel, because there are news reports that show that Rodriguez actually did tell Haspel that he intended to take the matter into his hand before he issued the cable, and that she didn't say, don't do it.
Well, I mean, if not Gina Haspel, who should be the head of the CIA, knowing that President Trump, of course, is the person who gets to nominate that person?
Well, there are other individuals who have equally impressive, core professional expertise, but are not tainted by torture. The names don't come to mind immediately, but certainly there are people within the CIA who are not tainted by torture. And I should just add that there is a significant body of CIA professionals who think that accountability for torture is a good thing, and that the CIA really went down the wrong path, not just legally, but also morally, in engaging in these techniques.
I wonder, one of our callers made a reference to this, Robert Turner, which is because Gina Haspel has spent her, 33-year career in the CIA, a lot of that undercover. There is so much that we will never know about her and what she did. Is that a disqualifier?
I certainly don't think so. I think it would be a horrible message to tell CIA employees that if you work in the Directorate of Operations or what's now called the National Clandestine Service, you're not going to ever be director, because that's going to encourage people to not go into the most dangerous and in some ways perhaps most important area of the agency's business. My sense is she has an incredibly strong record. Every living former head of the CIA, appointed by Democrats, by Republicans, has enthusiastically endorsed her. Now, the idea that there may be somebody else at CIA who would do a good job that was not around during the torture years or something like that may be true.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have to understand is who we're dealing with as the commander-in-chief. I am not a Trump fan. I think the man has no sense of honor. And the idea that he's going to pick that one slightly more perfect candidate as opposed to going for one of his relatives or one of his golfing buddies or some political hack, Steve Bannon, to head the CIA, I don't think the CIA can go a few years without effective leadership. Right now, it has very good leadership on the part of the nominee. I think she should be confirmed. As I look at the appointments he has made or the nominations he has made in other areas, this man is not a guy of tremendous judgment in picking people. Like to run the VA, he picks his doctor, who's never administered anything.
I'm going to jump in.
Someone is good or almost nil.
All right, I'm going to jump in again because we're almost out of time here. But Amrit, we have some calls and some comments, and it is interesting and a bit confounding that we're still debating waterboarding and whether the U.S. should engage in waterboarding. I'm just trying to imagine if what was done to Mohammed, I've got it here right at my fingertips, to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was done to an American soldier or an American Marine. I just don't think we would support anything like that.
I agree. I mean, and in fact, that was one of the line of questioning that Gina Haspel, I think failed to recognize. What, you know, there is a red line in crossing torture, and you deviate from the rule of law. You torture your enemies, and your enemies will torture you, and that really exposes Americans abroad to similar treatment. So I think that I think that she is wrong on so many accounts and unqualified to be CIA director.
Well, we will see, because it looks as if there will be a vote sometime soon, maybe even next week. Amrit Singh, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Senior Legal Officer for National Security Counterterrorism at the Open Society Justice Initiative, and she joined us from the NPR studios in New York City. Robert Turner, thank you for joining us as well.
It's a great pleasure.
And he's a law professor at the University of Virginia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program. And if you want to download a podcast of the show, you can go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And we do have a lot of them. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.